again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago on a beautiful December morning. And lo and behold, I look to my right. It's the tanned great one, Doug Tonis, as he's here to chat and wax poetic about the beloved Bulls returned refreshed from his vacation, which happened to coincide with the greatest moment for this season so far, a four-game winning streak. How you doing, brother?
Fantastic. I think I saw the first of the wins when Caruso against the Bucks, when Caruso hit the three at the end. So I've not missed all of them. But I've been petitioning for people to raise money to send me on a boat so we can just win out the rest of the year. But so far, nothing's come in.
That's right. Your cruise, so far, every moment that you're out at sea, the Bulls have won. And so I think we need to all figure out a way to get you, starboard as quickly as possible.
Yeah. Probably by tonight.
Are you implying that you think the result, the four-game winning streak, will end this evening?
If I was going to ever guess whether the Bulls win or lose a game, just generally speaking, I would probably guess loss. But if it's going to be a road game against the Milwaukee Bucks after we beat them, in the last game, I'm going to say for sure loss. I think this would actually be kind of a telling win if they won in a way, right? Like the Bucks record is a lot better than maybe the way they've played, but I think they're still a better team than us, and I think they should be mad that they lost to us.
No doubt. I mean, they're a better team than us, and I'm pretty sure. I mean, that was a miracle shot from Caruso to win that game to get us in overtime. And yeah, I'm not trying to
kind of outplayed all, them most of that game though. Like, anyway,
what do you mean?
Like, I felt the Bulls had played a better game than the Bucks, and then the Bucks had a little bit of a miracle comeback at the end, which happens with Damian Lillard. But even though it was a miracle shot by Caruso, I don't feel like, oh, the Bulls didn't deserve to win that game or anything. Like, I think they deserve to win that game. That's all.
Oh, no, I agree with you. They were up 92-90 on the strength of the killer season, Drummond. Excuse me, 92-80 after being tied 80-80. And then, the Bucks slowly came back, and they didn't play well that game. I agree with you. The Bulls outplayed them. They probably deserved to win that game. That said, the Bulls and Bucks play 10 times. They're going to win 8 of them, the Bucks.
Yeah.
Would you concur?
Yeah. But the Bucks are a better team, even with their struggles. I'm sure they're a team that's looking at, like, we just got to find our groove by the end of the year and not so concerned with their struggles now as much as they will be if they're still persisting in 3 or 4 months.
That said, what do you feel, outside of your time spent in international waters, what do you feel is the primary reason for this turnaround, this four-game winning streak that just so happens to coincide with the lack of Zach LaVine? Do you feel Zach LaVine's departure has something to do with this? Do you feel they would have won if Zach was there? I'd love to get your opinion on why is this happening? Why are they winning 4 games in a row? And do you think this is something that can continue without Zach LaVine?
I mean, I think part of it is you played the Hornets without LaMelo Ball, right? Like, they're probably one of the worst teams in the league, maybe the worst team or whatever, around the teams like Detroit and Washington who are, like, actively trying to lose if LaMelo's not there. So, one of those games wasn't really meaningful. One was the kind of miracle win against the Bucks, and the Bucks played just really, really badly. Pelicans are a solid 500 team. They beat them. And I'm blanking on who the San Antonio Spurs was the other win. And yeah, I mean, the Spurs are also like one of the bottom teams in the league. So two of those teams are just kind of like games, even with how the Bulls are playing, you expect them to win. One is a game you would have expected them to lose. And one's a game you would have thought they'll probably lose, but they would have a shot at, right? Like the Pelicans aren't amazing. So I think I'd say at the 4-game sample size, I'd say more coincidence. I do think there is something to if Zach is carrying a bad attitude and a negative aura around him because he wants to be traded, that him being away probably lightens up the rest of the team. Like, I don't think they're better than with an engaged Zach LaVine, but it's not hard to make the case they're better than with a disengaged Zach LaVine that maybe is, causing a bad air in the locker room or whatever. And not like he's purposely being disruptive, but like, you know, it's like if you were sitting at your job going like, I want to quit, I'm moving somewhere else, like that's going to create something in the environment, right? So, you know, I think it's not like, oh, they're better without a healthy, good, engaged Zach, but they might be better than with a disengaged Zach.
I think it's clear that the Bulls probably would have won against Charlotte and the Spurs if Zach LaVine played. I'm going to get out on a limb and say that. But I do think there is something to the fact that his absence has opened up an opportunity for Coby White to take more shots. And man, oh man, is he taking advantage of that. He's leading the league, last I saw, in three-point percentage over the past 8 games. So when you're shooting at such a high volume, 9 attempts per game, and hitting at a rate that no one else in the league is touching, usually good things follow. And I think he's been clearly the best player during this stretch and the impetus for these wins. Do you feel Coby, has this recent stretch of greatness, has it changed for you at all where you feel his ceiling could be?
We've seen Coby go on these heaters before where he just like is on fire. So for the size of the stretch it's been, no, it hasn't changed my mind. But in you are maybe the highest person I know on Coby, and I'll give you credit for that. But I'm pretty, I've been pretty high on Coby too. You know, I like him. I think both of us were in the, he has a lot more potential than people think he does camp. And you took it a whole other level than I have. And certainly over the last 4 games, he has hit the level that you've said he could. Now whether that's sustainable or not, I have to see it for quite a bit longer than what I've seen so far to view that as sustainable, but it's whatever, you know, it's never out of the question. If you can shoot the three really, really well and you can get them up in volume like Coby can, there's like the sky's the limit, right? If you can generate threes Absolutely. Off the dribble and shoot 10 a game, the sky is the limit, and shoot over 40%, the sky is the limit. And so whether that's something, and I think Kobe's been shooting over 50%, I want to say, I saw it read somewhere that over the last whatever X games, I don't know if it was 4 or over a longer stretch, but he's been absolutely a flamethrower. So, you know, if he could keep that up, that would be all world performance. I mean, I don't think either of us think he's going to, you know, continue to shoot 50% from three, right? That's, I mean, no one does that. That would be unheard of. But yeah, if he continues to shoot like say 42%, like that's maybe the upper boundary of sustainable, you know, like low 40s is probably the upper boundary of what we see really high volume guys do. If he could do that, then he could be a star. So that's what he would have to do it, though. And, you know, the odds are certainly against him doing that. You know, the defensive attention is going to start increasing massively. If he sustains this, you know, he'll start getting Steph Curry treatment on defense against him. And then probably the rates are going to drop again after that. But yeah, kudos to Coby for just playing unbelievable and shooting the ball unbelievably well.
And I think you absolutely, I agree with what you said, that before the season, you and I talked about, like, who are the two players we're most excited about? And we had stated Zach and Coby with the implication that those were the only two holdovers from the previous front office. But I think, obviously, Zach,
his 50% right.
50% right, exactly. 100% on. Exactly. And one thing I will say is, like, Coby, the area where I'm most impressed with him in his improvement is passing. Like, if you watch the last game where Torrey Craig hit several key three-pointers, I think he had 3, maybe even 4, over the course of that game against the Spurs, almost every one of those were assisted by Coby, and they were incredible passes, like off a drive and kick, some very high-difficulty passes. So that's an area where he's improved. His defense has improved. Like, every single aspect of his game has improved. And he provides, like, a joy, you know, and a real leadership to this team that I think, you know, is so important and underrated. So, like, and he's a good rebounder. He's averaging 6 rebounds, Doug, in his last, during this stretch. I think he's averaging a 24-6-6 over the last 4 games in this winning streak, which is just incredible numbers. And you're right, those are all-star numbers. So, I, who am the greatest, probably biggest backer of Coby White and his ceiling, I didn't expect to see this type of play leading the NBA in three-point shooting over the course of the last 8 games. That said, I'm really excited about him, and I think he's the primary reason things have turned around. Let's go, though, to what are the consequences for this for Zach LaVine? Like, the fact that he's out, there's a general attitude. I've heard people say this throughout, or fans say this, and commentators say that. There's a general attitude throughout the league that Zach LaVine is a quote-unquote losing player. It's not conducive to winning. What he brings is not conducive to winning long-term. Do you feel that this four-game winning streak has significantly hindered his trade value, and that it would potentially, in a way, be a bad thing for the Bulls in terms of what they're going to get in return?
I think there's always a possibility that that's true. But I tend to think probably not. I think when you look at, say, James Harden, who literally had passes bouncing off his face while trying to get out of Houston, and they still like were able to trade him for a lot, right? Like, people look and they're like, he wants out, he's disengaged. Like, I think people are able to put those things together and not say like, oh wow, Zach just kills winning because this happened. They can also put those things together and say, yeah, he doesn't want to be there. He has a negative air because of whatever, and the team was doing this and that. And, you know, with him gone, the team is freed up a little bit, and Kobe shot an unsustainable amount of threes. So whatever. I don't think it will make a big difference. But, man, that word think really has a lot of wiggle room in it, doesn't it? Because in the end, it's like,
yes,
really 29 individuals who have whatever emotions and thoughts they have about it. And, you know, human beings have recency bias. They have all kinds of biases. So it's definitely within the realm of possibility that it's going to make an impact. But I think they'll still be able to move them, and I think the return will probably still end up being similar. And I don't think the return is going to be that great. You know, we talked about it before, and I kind of said I think he's worth maybe two mid-round first draft picks, like two mid to lates, like two non-lottery picks, you know, and like maybe one late lottery pick instead of two lesser picks or something. Like, that's just not a really heavy return either way. I think, and I'll get your thoughts on this. I mean, do you think, regardless of what the value of Zach is in a trade, do you think Karnišovas looks at what's happened in these four games and he starts thinking, I want different things back now? Like, maybe I don't want to trade DeMar anymore. Maybe I want role players back for Zach, and I want to try to win with this group. I don't know that we would have ever said he was fully committed to rebuilding anyway. I thought that was a risk even before this stretch. But do you think that risk of the organization trying to fight for the playoffs this year has gone up with these last few games?
Oh, absolutely. I think it was already there. All the reporting was that he wanted to see the team, how it would perform without Zach LaVine. And I don't think they're going to trade DeMar. I don't think they're going to trade Caruso. They're only a game out of the final play-in now. So I don't even think there's a question on this. I think you're right. It's likely that his ask from the Los Angeles Lakers are going to be more in the realm of probably rotation role players as opposed to draft assets. And, you know, like, I really believe that. I think if he's got a choice between a role player that you think will help with the team currently as is in an endeavor to get into the playoffs, he'll be more likely to do that than trade for a 2029 first rounder. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I saw this pop up on my Twitter feed a few seconds ago from our buddy Jay Pat, who's on Cash Considerations podcast and long-term bloggable writer. And God, I think he's on Forbes now. He's all over the place. But anyway, Jay just posted something on Hashem's, I think it was podcast or something, basically saying Lakers and 76ers are suitors for Zach, but being patient. Teams are monitoring the DeRozan situation, and the Bulls don't want to trade Caruso. I think, assuming all of that's true, and, you know, whatever, no idea how true that is, it's worth noting Shams is represented by the same agency as Zach. They're both Clutch clients, so take that for what it's worth. But assuming that's true, I think it is like malfeasance that we would not trade Caruso at this point. Like, it is maybe a fireable offense that you want to chase down the 10th spot you know, and Caruso's not, I love Caruso. Like, might be, like, in the top three or four most lovable guys who are not, like, star players. You know, up there with, like, yes, the Nate Robinson season. Taj Gibson. I mean, he was here for a long time, but, like, if you think of, like, short-term impact guys. Yeah, like, just, everyone who watches the Bulls loves Caruso. And if Caruso is traded to your team, you'll love him too, right? But where are you going with this group? I mean, like, he's the only, he may have the most value of the guys you can trade. It's between him and Zach, who has the most value.
He does.
And you're gonna hang on to him now to chase the 10th seed in the play-in tournament with, like, your other main pieces being Vooch and DeMar, who have, like, really short time frames. Like, what is your end game here? It's like you can't see 30 feet in front of you. Like, to know where this is going or what's going to happen. Like, it just, if that's really true, and I don't want to, like, overreact to it until we actually just see what happens. But if that's really true, this is just, like, not trading Vooch at the deadline last year. It's not trading DeMar after his all-NBA season. It's not trading, you know, Zach when his value is higher. Like, it's just this parade of bad decisions, like, to chase nothing of value. And I think that's just, like, really concerning for me. And whatever, you know, I'm an Arturis kind of Chauvis hater anyway, so shouldn't be surprised that I'm concerned with something they would do. But it's just complete ineptitude at this point to be looking for role players and chasing the 10 seed.
I don't have any doubts. I think we kind of touched on this in a previous pod, but Caruso demand, you know, the law of supply and demand, like, there's many teams that are going to be bidding for the services of Alex Caruso. He's going to help any team improve. And if you're a contender, and there's a lot of teams out there that probably feel that they have a chance, that would be willing to offer you quite a bit for Alex Caruso. And that, and those, if you play it right, you should be able to get at least one first-round pick and possibly a second and a number of second-rounders, maybe even a role player for him. He's that good, and he impacts defense in a great way. Unfortunately for Zach LaVine, I think his trade value is at a low end right now. This winning streak hasn't helped him, and he's now hurt. And, you know, I don't know how serious that injury is. I mean, there's a lot of speculation on it. I think he's legitimately hurt. I think both things are true at the same time. The Bulls probably don't want him to play. It's not going to be a long-term injury, but it is a foot injury, which can lead to more serious things. So I don't think he's going to play for the Bulls again. And I also feel like you probably get more for Caruso than Zach LaVine right now. I think he will get traded to the Lakers, and Zach LaVine will. And I also feel that that would be a great place for him to go. They have an elite rim defender in AD who just played incredible in the play-in championship game. I think that's a perfect fit for Zach LaVine, and I think he will help to make the Lakers a contender and potentially upset the Denver Nuggets in the Western Conference Finals. What say you?
Yeah, that trade feels like, it feels like there's room there for something to happen too. You know, they've got some guys they signed that are kind of like underperforming, and we would want role, like, if we go the role player route back, like, it would make me throw up in my mouth, but it's not hard to see them going like, oh, D'Angelo Russell and Rui Hachimura and a second rounder for Zach. Like, for what this front office has done, like, it feels like they'd be like, yeah, this is a trade that makes sense for us. So we'll see what happens. I mean, like, I don't want to get offended before something happens because we should give them the benefit of the doubt, and we should, I don't want to pre-grade a move before a move has happened. You know, like, I'll flame away after the move has happened. But, you know, when there's a rumor mill, the other thing too is it's just like, you don't know what offers they're choosing between. So that's also a tough thing, but I definitely have a lot of concerns that they're not going to trade for future assets. They're going to trade for current assets, and we'll see what happens.
I think if the Bulls play it right, Clutch and LeBron hold so much sway with the Los Angeles Lakers that I do feel like if you played a long game and you sit Zach out, you should be able to get Austin Reeves in a deal. And that's a player I would feel very happy about acquiring. He hasn't played great for the vast majority of the year. He's had some really nice moments, don't get me wrong. And I think he's a good player, but I'd rather take him any day than what you had just outlined. And so, like, I think you, if they go on a 2 or 3 game losing streak and Reeves does not play well, I can see LeBron and Clutch demanding, hey, let's move him for Zach in some type of deal and playing the long game a little bit. But I think you're right. I think they are probably going to go in that direction where they're just going to say, hey, we want to make the playoffs. We can't keep on waiting. Reeves can't be traded to January 15th. We're not going to wait. We're going to make this deal, and it might be as early as this weekend.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I have a question for you. So some big news happened. The Lakers won the first in-season tournament. LeBron James was MVP. Does LeBron James winning the in-season tournament, being the first MVP, giving him several awards Jordan doesn't have, change your opinion on LeBron versus Jordan?
No. Jordan doesn't have the award because it didn't exist when he played. But I think we're both pretty confident the 72-win team probably would have won the in-season tournament. I mean, it would have been likely, and Jordan would have likely been the MVP. I think there's an argument to make that AD deserved the MVP. I mean, he was insane in that championship game.
He was insane in the championship game.
Incredible performance. But yeah, exactly, I've heard this argument before. I mean, come on. That said, LeBron has, I mean, that second game against the Pelicans, the semifinal game was some pretty special stuff. I am not a LeBron hater. I think he's the second best player I've ever seen. In the Jordan debate, though, Jordan will always stand triumphant because he never lost. He never shrunk in the finals, and we do have video of LeBron doing just that in 2011 versus the Dallas Mavericks. You can't erase that. It will never go away. He can win every final from here until kingdom come. But that happened, and that never happened to Michael Jordan. But he is clearly, to me, the second best ever. He's solidified that status, and he's better than everyone else I've ever seen. So do you agree with that? Is LeBron number two on your list?
LeBron is generally number two on my list. The guy, I always look at it like I don't compare people I didn't see play. Well, I felt like I was old enough to really appreciate basketball. So, like, I saw Bird play and I saw Magic play, but I don't know that I was old enough to watch them in their primes and really appreciate their greatness. It just is what it is. You know, so when I think of the guys I would compare in that, like, next tier for me, Shaq, LeBron, and, you know, are probably two and three for me. And I would have a tough time deciding between those guys. And I think, for me, LeBron has passed Shaq just due to the longevity. I think, like, at their peaks, they were pretty similar, but LeBron had more longevity in a longer peak than Shaq did. So I give him credit for that.
I mean, there's no doubt Shaq was one of the most impactful players we've ever seen. He was a force of nature, and, yeah, it's hard to argue this. But he did have a big issue with not being able to hit free throws, and that was something down the stretch that I think kind of it helped that he was paired with Kobe to win multiple titles, and having that big, you know, fault really to me kind of diminished him a little bit enough that I wouldn't call him even in my top three or four. But that said, he's definitely in the top 10. He's an incredible player.
I get it, but I still think, like, in the end of the day, like, no one could stop him. Like, you just couldn't stop him. If they actually reffed Shaq fairly, he would have had like it would have been so much worse. Like, they let people just, like, foul the hell out of him. Like, it was really, really bad. But anyway, Shaq to me is up there. Like, Tim Duncan would be another guy who you could throw out there. Steph Curry would be another guy I think you could throw out there for, like, totally different reasons.
Hakeem Olajuwon. I think Hakeem Olajuwon's very underrated player.
I got Hakeem below those guys. I mean, I would get the case for him, but I got Hakeem a notch below those guys myself.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
And Hakeem is, like, a little bit in the era where, like, probably I really was towards the end of his career was when I really got to see him more. But I still have Hakeem a little step below those guys. Like, I think of guys who just feared the most. Like, for me, it's like LeBron and Shaq were the two guys that I just felt like Like, when they're in their prime, like, you couldn't even begin to think of something to do against them. Like, you just couldn't. You could, like, send three guys at them, and it just didn't, like, matter. Like, it's just, like, nothing. Like, I feel like, you know, you could be like, well, I'll try and be physical with Curry or, like, whatever. And Tim Duncan wasn't going to, like, dominate you the same way Shaq would with his scoring and, you know, whatever. But, like, LeBron and Shaq, maybe just the two most physical players I've ever seen, where they're just, like, the physical advantage was so overwhelming. It was just, you didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
So anyway, but yeah, I got LeBron passing Shaq, and whether you have Shaq a little lower than me, doesn't matter. Like, there's like a gap between Jordan and whoever you have at number two. And then I think now there's kind of a gap between LeBron and whoever you have at number three. And then after that, it's pretty close. And maybe I'll say, like, someone, if they wanted to argue, like, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar belongs in that list with, like, LeBron or Magic or Bird, like, I'm like, I wouldn't argue too strongly against those guys being included at kind of like the LeBron level, just because I can't judge them as much and their accomplishments are also really amazing. But of the guys I've seen, you know, Jordan number one by a good margin, LeBron now number two by a good margin, and then I think you're in for a pretty solid debate for the next seven guys.
Well said. Hey, to wrap this up, because we're already over or almost at a half an hour, I did want to do a quick run through, now that we're done with the quarterly season, the quarter of the season.
Sure.
Your quarterly grades. What would you grade these following players? And I don't want to do the entire roster, but let's just the key ones. So I'm going to start out. I'm going to throw out a name. Give me your grade.
Before we start, I think it's critically important to set the criteria. Are we grading on an absolute scale, or are we grading relative to our expectations of the player and their role?
Relative to their your expectations and their role, and you need to state beforehand what those expectations were. So just because the audience is not going to
Yeah, no, that's fine. Know. I just want to, because it's different. Like Kobe White is a great example. Relative to expectations, I think he's an A+. Relative to absolute scale, like probably more like a B. So, you know, that's just as an example.
Well
of a
said.
Guy who's like, he did much better than we thought he would do, and we thought he would do really well, you know, the two of us. But he's still not like a superstar or anything. You know, he's not going to be in the MVP voting area or anything, where like a Jokic is like an A+ on an absolute scale. So that's, you know, okay.
So let's hit the ground running here. I already provided mine on the last episode of Chicago Bullseye, which you can also get at Spotify and iTunes, etc. But I'll provide mine too. I'm not going to give a long comment though, because
okay. Fair enough.
For time reasons. So let's hit the ground running with Vooch. We'll start out with Vooch. At the age of 33, 45% from the field, 25% from three, averaging 85% from the free throw line. He's averaging, what's his points per game? 16.8. What say you on the great recruiter, Nikola Vucevic?
I'd give him like a C+.
Really? It's a little higher than I expected. Please do expound on it.
I had no expectations for Vooch.
Okay.
I think he's going into the season, I described him as a role player, not a star player, bottom tier starting center, maybe a bench caliber big. And yeah, I think all those things are still true. And I think he's played fine at that level.
Okay. A little bit higher than expected. Kobe White.
I mean, relative to expectations, and my expectations were not super high, but like I'd say higher than most people, I'd give Kobe an A. I mean, it wasn't always an A, but I think over the last four games, it's gotten up to A. And the other thing I'll say is, with Kobe, we talked a lot about his passing at the beginning of the season. He didn't have great passing numbers, but you could see him making much better passes and making much better decisions and look away passes and things like that. And I think you're just starting to see the fruits of those labor. I think Kobe is even playing better than his stats show today. I think he's really having a strong season.
Well said. Agreed too. DeMar DeRozan, Really quickly, 44% from the field, 35.8% from three, which is above his career. It would be constitute his career high from the three-point line. 80% from the free throw line, averaging 22 points per game, leading the team in scoring. What say you on DeMar DeRozan?
I'd say about a C. He's having an okay season, about what I expected he would do. Nothing exciting. Like his volume scoring is down a little bit. His three-point shooting is up a little bit, but he's not taking like a ton of attempts. His strengths are still they've always been his strengths, you know, getting to the foul line, you know, hitting clutch shots. But leading the team in assists, you know.
All right, Zach LaVine, 18 games.
Probably a D-.
Like, what did you say?
D-.
30, B-? Really? D, you have him that
D,
high?
D is in Doug.
Oh, D-. D oh, minus. D is in Doug Donis. Sorry, the great
D
one.
Is in damn gotcha. That guy. I don't. Yeah. Like, I mean, yeah, it's no been doubt. A really poor season for Zach. The efficiency has been way down. He's obviously disengaged at this point. He's also now hurt. He's demanded a trade. I mean, like, you know, it's one of the guys I'd hope that maybe could step up a little bit more, especially coming off the end of that last season where he was just unbelievable. And it just kind of feels like he threw in the towel before the season started. And you wish he just had a conversation with management in the offseason saying, like, get me out of here before this whole thing started.
Amen. It would have been better for all parties involved. Patrick Williams, Zach included. 43% from the field, 33.8% from three. Shooting 71% from the free throw line, averaging 12.2 points per game. What say you on Patrick Williams?
Yeah, I think just so you know, you're reading all the per 36 numbers, not the per game numbers. So you're saying.
Oh, my bad. I apologize.
But whatever. It doesn't change anything. I'm just like.
Oh, you're right. Right. He's only Patrick Williams is only. You're right. Good point. Patrick Williams is only averaging. I can't believe I said that. 8.6 points per game.
Yeah, I mean, all the guys you've mentioned are a teeny bit off, but it. Pat is the first one whose minutes are considerably less than 36, so the gap on all the other guys was minimal. Anyway, I'd say a C. Pat's been about who I thought he has. You know, people seem overly excited from what I've read on Twitter about how he stepped up the last few games, and you know, he's averaging 13 points a game and blah blah blah. And I'm like, wow, 13 points a game for a 4-game stretch, what a fucking winner. Thank God we got this guy. Like, I don't know. Like it's like the bar is so low for Pat to do something good for people to be excited about it. Yeah. And like, whatever. It's great. I'm glad he's playing better. Like, I don't want to. He is playing better. And that's great. But he's playing better than, like, absolutely terrible. And it's, like, not like he's. But whatever. I'm glad he's playing better. It's a good statement. He's playing about how
Doug,
I thought
are you
he
ready?
Would. Yeah.
Are you ready for his numbers during this 4-game winning streak? 13.5 points per game, 5.3 rebounds per game, 1.8 assists, 54% from the field, 28% from three, 40% from the free throw line. So he has definitely upped his rebounding, but again, these numbers are nothing to write home about, and I agree with you. I've seen nothing but, like, oh my gosh, like the big threes, including the big three. I'm like, it's
his
totally
block and
laughable.
Steal numbers have been better too. Like, in it's hard to guess, like, how much you want to count defense with block and steal numbers. It's not nothing, but it's not everything. And I've not seen the games to say, like, subjectively whether his defense looks better or not. But that seems to be a thing people are saying, is that
been
his
way
defense
better.
Looks better. So, you know, that's good, and that he seems more engaged and more energetic and more aggressive. And so those are all good traits. I hope Pat keeps them up. I don't want to oversell his improvement, you know, over a very small stretch, because it's not massive improvement. You know, you look at, like, guys we've been excited about in the past, and it's like they're throwing up, like, a month worth of 20-point games and high efficiency, and we're excited about 4 games of, like, moderate efficiency and moderate volume. So it's a small incremental positive step forward for Pat, and we hope he continues to make those as the season goes on.
A few more. Alex Crusoe, I think we're all going to say A.
Yeah, I mean, we had pretty good expectations for Alex, but the three-point shooting has really been unexpected and phenomenal.
46%, incredible. Yeah, unequivocally an A. We already kind of talked about him, so we can move on. Torrey Craig, Torrey's at 21 minutes per game, 43% from the field, 39% from three, all of a sudden with a hot streak, which is a lot more in line where we were hoping him to be. 5.9 points per game. What say you on Torrey Craig?
I'd say like a B. Probably a little better than I thought he'd be. You know, and he's floated up and down. He started off the season great, then he had a terrible stretch, and then now he's had another good stretch, and he's kind of those things have averaged out into a little better than I expected, but not maybe B minus. But solid. I mean, for a vet min guy, maybe a better way instead of expectations is to actually compare them to their contract. If we had started over, I would have chosen that. And I would say, like, compared to his contract, Torrey Craig's an A. It's a great, great vet min signing. A guy that can give you really positive output in 20 minutes for the vet min is really fantastic.
How about Io?
I think Io's had a pretty solid year. I'd give Io a B. I think, yeah, he really had, I think, a sophomore slump last year, and in all aspects of the game. I haven't seen his last few games, how they've gone, and haven't heard anyone talk about him. But up until at least that point, I thought Io was really a pretty positive contributor whenever I saw him out there in kind of all facets.
Javon Carter.
I would give Carter probably a C minus. I expected more. His shooting really hasn't been what I thought it would be. I don't think he's impacted the game defensively like I hoped he might either. I hadn't watched a lot of Javon Carter before, but you know, overall his efficiency has been very poor on offense. I don't think he's really made up for that in any meaningful other areas.
One last player, Andre Drummond. I think everyone else has not played enough to be a really solid grade. So Andre Drummond, what say you?
Relative to my expectations, I'd give him probably a C. Is about what I expected, but to be fair, for a vet min guy or basically a vet min guy, I'd give him an A. And I think he should play more minutes.
Yeah, no doubt.
I think he's phenomenal. I like Drummond a lot more than Billy Donovan last year, and that remains true this year. I don't know why he doesn't get on the court more. I know he's going to do two really Drummond-y things a game and, like, just, you know, try and dunk the ball and hit the side of the backboard or, like, you know, just dribble the ball off his ass somehow or like whatever, like, and just do something really dumb. And then he's going to do like three or four really amazing Drummondy things a game too. And, you know, like just fight for a bunch of incredible offensive boards. And the like really bad Shaqt and the Fool type stuff, along with the really good stuff, like it balances out in favor of the good stuff. So I wish he played more, but you know, I'm not the coach.
Drummondy. I love that. Drummondy things. Let's go over really quick before to wrap this up as we bring in the bus, the Bulls schedule for the next, you know, the next foreseeable future, let's say. So they're playing the Bucks tonight. They got the Nuggets tomorrow. They got the Heat. Here's the next games they have. The Heat twice, back-to-back. The Sixers, the Lakers, the Spurs on the 21st of December. Then they have the Cavs, the Hawks, the Pacers, the 76ers in a back-to-back, the Knicks, and then the Hornets on January 5th. So we're looking at one team that I think they'll be favored against. That's the Spurs between now and when they play the Hornets on the 5th of January. How many wins do they get in the next? Let's see here. All right, let's just go for the next eight games. So they're playing again one more time. The Bucks tonight. They got the Bucks, the Nuggets, the Heat, the Sixers, the Lakers. So the next six games, how many do they win?
That's interesting. I want to give them two.
Two and four on the road.
So I think that's tough. I mean, I feel like they'll get one against Miami. And then I just think they'll get like one out of nowhere other game, like one you wouldn't expect. Certainly, it wouldn't surprise me if it was one or zero. But I think they'll get two somehow.
I think they're going to play all these close, but I think they're going to go 0-6. I don't see them winning any of these games. The Lakers, unless that Lakers game against the Bulls on December 20th is 7 o'clock on a Wednesday. unless for some reason AD or LeBron miss that game, I think they're going to lose all of these games.
Yeah, I mean, those teams, I'd say the Heat are not like a team you just can't see yourself beating. You know, you're playing the Heat twice. I feel like you can win one of those two games.
Agreed. Yep. Agreed.
So,
and
the other,
again, if Kobe
the other games,
keeps on playing like this, who knows, right?
Yeah. The other games, I agree. Like, you feel like you're all a pretty, you're significant. Like, I wouldn't give us more than a 1 in 5 chance of winning against any of the other things, but you have 4 of them. So if you have 1 in 5 4 times, odds are you'll get one of them.
Yeah.
That's, well, you know, it's just like, I mean, I agree. It's like you're pretty deep underdog in those other games, and you're a small underdog in Miami. And, you know, I'd be a little surprised if we went 0-6. I mean, like I said, we're going to be underdogs in all 6 games. But 0-6, it's like you're not like 1 in 100 underdogs in all 6 games, right? Like, you know, it's like what? Like probably 2 out of 5 chance in Miami, and you play that one twice. More likely you get one than not. And then, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, it wouldn't shock me if we went 0-6. I just feel like we should get at least one, and I think somehow we'll squeak out a second.
All right. For one of the few times you're more positive than me.
This is again, the most negative I've heard you. I mean, like, I think if we went against the 72-win Bulls with this squad, you'd still predict, you know, we'd do better than 0-6.
I just think it's possible the Bulls can play very well in all these games and still go 0-6 because
that's how good the Bucks are.
The Nuggets are defending champs, and in that Nuggets game, actually, I think is one of the games that they'll have a better shot of winning. Nuggets have not been playing that great. And then you get played a Heat in Miami back-to-back. You know, it's always a tough game with them. They get all the calls at the 76ers and then the Lakers. Like, they could play really well by
tough.
2 points. And yeah, exactly. They have been
tough.
A terrible road team all year. So, you know, we shall see. But yeah, I hope I'm wrong. But for one of the few times.
I don't know that I even have, like.
Brighter than me.
Would you be upset if they were 0-6? Like, in some ways, if they went 0-6, I'd be like, all right, well, now we can stop talking about trying to chase the 10th spot this year. Maybe we stop talking about how the Bulls are better without Zach LaVine. You know, like,
I agree.
They might actually be better off 0-6 than if they went like 4-2, that'd be really interesting to see what would happen afterwards.
I think at that point, it's all in on the current Acme plan, which is to trade Zach and see what we have.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
I also feel it's against my nature to feel positive about 0-6, regardless of how it factors into the team as a long term. It's against C. Red Fred's nature to be happy about an 0-6.
I'm not saying you should be happy. I'm just saying there could be some. I don't know. I mean, it's like one of those seasons where it's really hard to figure out like what the silver linings are.
Though I will say if they go through this stretch 4-2, I think the Acme plan becomes far more reasonable. I mean, 4-2 over this stretch means that Coby White is playing out of his mind. It means that the team is significantly better without Zach. At that point, I'm going to say, you know what, there is something to this. They're a better team without Zach LaVine. And maybe you do go in that direction. I mean, that's enough for me because you're playing all the best teams in the NBA. You know, with the exception of probably Boston, to go 4-2 through this stretch is an accomplishment.
Yeah, I could see it. Like I said, my concern would still not be so much. Like, I agree. With role players, you could maybe fight your way back into being like a low-rung playoff team, but you're still going to be a sacrificial lamb in the playoffs, and then you're still stuck with the where are you going next year? Are you doubling down on DeRozan? Anyway, we'll talk about that enough. I will be excited if they go 4-2 because I do enjoy watching Bulls wins and the Bulls play. So, you know, like I try to keep myself in the moment and then at least enjoy the games and the good moments when they happen. Yeah, and if they lose, then I'll try and look at the bright side and say, like, maybe we'll make better long-term decisions.
Yes, I guess in the big picture, it's always a positive bus ride where we can finish up with going 0-6, there's positives, or 4-2, there's positives. Either way, it's all positive for the beloved Bull.
If they go 6-0, right, I'll be all in. We should just trade.
There we go. I'm going to hold you to that. If they do, then we do need to have some type of special show where you become Sea Red Dog officially and join the prophecy.
I'll change the Twitter handle around.
No, it's all good. We got to get Steph and Noah to draw a picture of me or somehow. Until next time, let's bring the beloved bus in. Let's go, Bulls.
Go, Bulls.